Welcome to BDO To Go, casual industry conversation brought to you by the restaurant industry professionals at BDO. The constantly evolving landscape of the industry forces operators and owners to adapt quickly and maintain a keen awareness of consumer and economic shifts. Understanding these business impacts and insights is key to the continued success and resilience of the restaurant industry. That's why we crafted our new BDO To Go podcast series, a monthly podcast that you can take to go.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining us today for another episode of BDO To Go, our podcast dedicated to exploring industry trends, best practices, and all things restaurants. My name is Meg Potts, co-lead of BDO's National Restaurant Industry Group, and I'm honored to be joined today by Jay Duke, the Global Head of Advisory at BDO. Jay Duke has over 35 years of public accounting experience and has held significant leadership roles at BDO, including leading the advisory practice and serving on the Board of Directors executive team. He has managed numerous audit and consulting engagements, assisting clients with mergers, acquisitions, and complex transactions across various industries. He is also on the board of International Franchise Association, otherwise known as the IFA, and has had the focus on franchising going back to the 1990s, speaking regularly at the IFA convention and other industry events. As we kick off 2025, it seemed like the perfect time to sit down with Jay to discuss franchising trends. Hi, Jay. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Meg. It is great to be here today. And unfortunately, it's closer to 40 years now, believe it or not. So, but we won't tell anybody that.
No, we don't need to focus on the number of years. Yes.
And Meg, your timing is perfect because we are actually just 1 week away from the IFA annual convention in Las Vegas. Starts 1 week from tomorrow. So very timely topic.
Yes. And as we head into that, I'd love to kind of start by establishing the state of franchising and maybe do a quick recap of 2024. As we started the year, franchises which were dominated by QSR restaurants, I think represented approximately 10% of all businesses and employs almost 9 million people. But 24 was definitely an interesting year.
Yeah, I thought 24 was one of those years that I was really hoping for a breakout year. But as it went forward, it became clear 2024 was going to be mixed at best. There were a significant number of bankruptcies among some of the older restaurant groups because of the cost to maintain, the cost to rebrand, all those sort of things. And you found a lot of the bigger systems exiting certain stores that just weren't going to make it, and then trying to concentrate on the future and where they were headed. And so, and during that, there were also a number of new brands that were emerging. That's an annual thing, good times and bad times. There's a lot of emerging new brands. And 2024 was no exception to that. The best part about 2024 is that the year closed really strong. There were some great indicators going forward. Inflation getting under control, prices coming into play. But really, I think what caused 2024 not to be a better year than it might have been was we had this overhang of an election in the United States, but around the world, there were elections everywhere. And I think a lot of people wanted to take a wait and see look to see where should they invest? What's the right place to go? What will 2025 hold after these elections? And so we now have that behind us. And I will tell you, when I talk to a lot of people in private equity and people looking to do transactions, they were waiting on the sidelines just to see which way the wind was going to blow. So as we head into 25, the expectations are very robust at this point in time.
Yeah, it's, so many of those things. It's like we saw everything from the number of bankruptcies, which wasn't just restaurants or franchises.
Oh, of course not.
I mean, the U.S. corporate bankruptcy filings, I think, hit a 14-year high last year. But then we also saw some older brands that experienced record same-store sales growth, one of which topped 30% in same-store sales. So it was so interesting to see that complete parameter there.
And a lot of it has to do with the mix of management, new injection of people, investment, and all that. And so it really is a deal to deal, company to company. And I think another good strong indicator for 2025 was just recently the Restaurant Finance Development Conference occurred. And the experts on hand felt very positive for the restaurant environment, and especially for getting back to deal making and things like that. So people are pretty excited about 2025. Nothing is really holding us back. I'm looking forward really next week to hearing where the leaders of the industry are really pointing. But all indications from all the pre-meetings is they're expecting a very good year.
Yes. At the Restaurant Finance Development Conference, when we were there, it was a strong push and conversation around kind of the pent-up demand that was happening for raising capital and M&A and getting some deals done. So do you think the market will open quicker this year, or are you seeing that yet right now?
All indications, from people I know in the industry and what I'm reading in newspapers, all indications are that deal making is coming back, and these people are willing to invest now more than they were, say, last year about this time. And you're even seeing some transactions getting queued up in the next 30 days. There's even a major IPO, which we have not seen in years, a really major IPO in the restaurant franchising space. They've given notice that they plan to file their initial public offering as soon as the next 30 days. And this is a chain everyone would know. But it really, if they are successful, it will really open the floodgates for people to look at alternative exit strategies, for these big restaurant groups. And there's just a lot going on, a lot of new trends in the restaurant industry and the franchising side of it as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the IPO side, because it has been a slow IPO market over the last few years, and where private equity, on the other hand, continues to play that significant role, providing substantial capital to franchise brands, helping them both rapidly expand and also acquire new franchisees. Do you think that that will lead to more of like a consolidation of brands in the franchise industry?
I do. You know, typically IPOs were looked at as not as great an alternative to doing private equity transactions, primarily because, there's a lot of costs associated with being a public company, getting to public and then maintaining public and all that. But what we're seeing now is that where there was a pricing differential between what sellers wanted and what buyers were willing to give, that gap is closing because of a number of things. And in the private equity world, interest rates drive things a lot. And we're seeing that gap starting to close because we're seeing stabilization in interest rates. People feel pretty good about where they're headed. And as those values come closer together, deals get done faster. And that's much really important. And there seems to be more confidence in the lenders right now. And M&A through private equity, they rely on a lot of debt in many cases to get these deals done. So a more stable environment with interest rates and with lenders is critical.
And that really helps to diversify everyone's portfolios as well with some of that and the consolidation that could occur. Maybe take off some of the pressures that you mentioned earlier that people are experiencing and different brands are feeling right now.
Yeah. And these consolidations and platform plays that are occurring, that seems to be much more of the norm. Going back a decade, it seemed to be relatively new, with the exception of some really sophisticated private equity firms. But now you're seeing it become the norm, where people are looking to establish a brand and then add to that platform similar types of businesses, so they cover the landscape such that they're doing 6, 8, 10, 40 different brands on the same platform. And that's really interesting. And it really, you see a lot of energy behind that. And because of that, they're bidding up the pricing. So the pricing's getting a little bit stronger as we speak today than it was even 3-4 months ago.
Interesting. And that could also lead to more like non-traditional locations or footprints happening as they continue to diversify. I know we were talking about the rise of food halls.
Yeah. Non-traditional is something people are looking at. The mall model and the strip center model are played. They're not as lucrative as they once were. But you see people going into airports where they were never there before. College campuses, because college campuses are so resilient. Sporting arenas are really popular. And it's a really good opportunity for these brands to get into different non-traditional sorts of environments that are very lucrative. And we talked a little bit about the rise of the food halls, where it's multiple brands, maybe they're owned by the same franchisee or maybe they're not, but multiple brands all in the same space with a common area where they, like you and I go and I want a hamburger and you want tacos. We both can accomplish what we want to do in those food halls and sit together and enjoy our meal. And so I find that to be a really fun development.
And that really helps to offload some of the cost factor too, because they can spread it among multiple brands, and along with bringing synergies on the technology side.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And when you look at the really smart people, the smart operators in the business, they're really focusing on profitability right now, and profitability of their franchisees first, because by virtue of their franchisees being profitable, they'll attract new franchisees, new units, new openings. And as a result, the franchisor will make more money as well. And, you know, food costs, inflation, labor costs, there's been a lot of concern over that over the last 12 months. It seems to be stabilizing, but the key really is working and innovating with your franchisees to make sure they make money and that your concept is the preferred place for owners to invest their capital. So they're really focusing on margins and understanding that, but they're doing it in a different way today than perhaps they did 10 years ago. 10 years ago, it might've been a little bit more seat of the pants decision-making and all that. What you're seeing are much more data-driven decision-making using all kinds of data analytics, AI to a degree, to actually see where they're headed and where that profitability is going. And as a result of that, you see a real focus on really evaluating a supply chain. You see a focus really on evaluating food waste and inefficiencies and all these things that can add to the profitability of the franchisee and ultimately the franchisor. So we're seeing a lot of these people are really smart, the ones that are really leveraging data, and they're making some really interesting decisions, whether it's menu decisions or ordering decisions, inventory decisions. They were making some really, if they're investing in technology and they're investing in AI, which is critical to all of these, they're getting better information from which to make these decisions and ultimately making themselves and the franchisees much more profitable.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, first of all, when you start talking data-driven decisions, you know, you're talking my language. I love data. So yeah. I've seen them really become more creative to find ways to ultimately drive profitability. You know, many of the things that you talked about, and obviously wage pressures continue to be felt across the industry as wage requirements continue to go up across the country. But I'm also seeing it open the door for greater investment in technology, or kind of demanding that investment. But it can definitely be a barrier for groups that have been slow to adopt, especially over the last few years, that are just behind at this point.
Yeah. And circling back to some of our initial comments about, you know, some of the restructuring and bankruptcies that occurred, in many cases, those were older concepts that really didn't invest the money into technology, data analytics, AI, to really maximize their ability to drive profitability. They continue to do it the old way. And by doing it the old way, you get stuck with the old results. But by really harnessing the data that's out there, you can make some really informed decisions and really keep your, really make your decisions clear, have dashboards to tell you exactly what's happening real time, and really some really interesting things that you're seeing all these people use. And then they're also harnessing the power of social media to get the message out there and what's happening. And so it's a really neat world out there if you enjoy seeing technology play a role in this industry.
It is. And I can't underscore the impact of starting early for these groups. You know, you mentioned the larger, older brands that were very slow and stayed with, well, this is how we've done it. I know a lot of the groups that I've been working with lately really trying to drill home that you can't wait until you're bigger. You need to lay the foundation now before you get too big to make the change, because as you continue to grow, it'll just become harder to make some of those changes.
Yeah. And that's why these emerging brands really have an opportunity here, because as they're a smaller concept and they're starting to really grow, they can harness it cheaper and faster. They don't have all these legacy systems to get rid of. And that way, they can ultimately sometimes outperform some of the ones that have been around for a very, very long time. And while they're doing that, you're also seeing the footprint of many of these places come down a little bit, better use of space. And so I think the more innovative companies, the more innovative franchisors are embracing this, and they're seeing an impact to their bottom line, and most importantly, to their franchisees' bottom line.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you mentioned AI earlier, and obviously that's a buzzword of 2024 and continues to be as we go into 2025. But it's one of those where you can't just jump right in, like you mentioned. Just like you can't put a roof on a house without building the frame, you have to do the same thing with your data. You have to make a plan. You have to clean it.
Oh, my gosh.
And then above all else, you have to do it safely.
Yeah, you do have to do it. And you have to move to the cloud with a lot of the information to be able to properly use it. And you're right, if the data isn't clean, then your decision-making won't be clean either. You know, and AI really it's been a hot topic now for at least a year and a half, and AI started coming out and all that. And there was a lot of awareness, a lot of desire, but nobody quite knew how to harness it. And now what you're seeing is people have gotten beyond the wow factor and they're learning how to actually embrace it and use it in their day-to-day operations, as opposed to just doing really basic AI things. And as a result of that, and once again, they're seeing better results, better relationships with their customers. And once again, because of that higher profitability.
Yeah, well, I look forward to sitting down a year from now and talking about some of the impact that we see that it's had a good solid year in, now that we've kind of gotten past that wow factor.
Yeah, it's really incredible. And I will tell you, and just, you know, the new administration coming in is considered much more business friendly. Investment is now going to flow in more freely because of the tax situation is going to be such that we will probably stay in the lower tax brackets for these groups. The Tax Cut Jobs Act had a lot of benefits for people that are willing to invest in developing new products, developing new approaches to the things, building out, investing in new equipment and new stores and things like that. There's a lot of benefit. Like I said, people are kind of taking a wait and see, you know, where are we going to head? All indications now is that we have a much more friendly group towards franchising. And so as a result of that, we expect to see, you know, lower taxes for the franchisor and franchisees and incentives to invest. And so, you know, the tariff part will be a wild card because that could create inflationary issues. But I think they'll get that under control as well. So I think there's a lot of heavy tailwinds for franchising and in the restaurant sector. And there's a lot more confidence today than there was even 3 months ago.
Yeah, well, hopefully that will continue to help groups drive their profitability and continue to grow as we head into 2025.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, Jay, thank you for sharing your insights and your optimism for franchising trends in 2025. I really appreciate you being here.
Meg, it was my pleasure, and I really look forward to how 2025 goes and working with you closely.
Fabulous. Thank you all for joining us. Please feel free to reach out to either of us at any time. We invite you to subscribe to the BDO To Go podcast, and we'd love to have you join us on our next episode. Have a great day and enjoy a meal at a restaurant.
Thank you for listening to BDO To Go. Past episodes and related insights are available at bdo.com/BDO To Go, or you can go to iTunes or Spotify to rate, review, share, or subscribe to this podcast. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO. For more information on BDO's restaurant industry practice and the resources we provide, visit www.bdo.com/restaurants.